Blog Talk Radio.
You got Brenda Bradshaw, psychic, soul, card, reading, right now, Blog Talk.
It seems life was losing all its fun. Always loving on the run. There was nothing to be done. With you, turn my whole thing around, pick myself up off the ground. Come to these arms, I want to embrace you. You are my lady, I'll never replace you. Oh, Brenda, my Brenda, I'm thinking about your love.
About receiving, cooperation, forgiveness, and agreement. There are six decks. You get to pick each one of those decks as your story unfolds. In the cards, I concentrate and I listen inside of myself to the Holy Spirit telling me the interpretation. This show is not like any other show. Thank you so much for joining the show. Thank you for your patience as we go through and do a reading for someone. They may have gotten readings from other shows, but they didn't get this kind of reading. 347-838-8452. This is Brenda Bradshaw. We're doing the readings, messages from the Holy Spirit. Thank you so much for all your love and all your support.
I'm thinking about your love.
Yeah.
Well, good morning. I had a question on Facebook this morning from Natalie Durham, and she is in the group I Am Soul Searching. You can join that group, I Am Soul Searching, and a lot of good questions come up, and one was offered me today about the light body. She was mentioning she wanted to know more information about the light body and where it's located. And, of course, you know, we have to understand there's an energy field around the physical body called the aura. And it is our energy light body, and it surrounds the physical body. It's not inside you. And she was asking questions like, how come when I walk into a room, I actually can feel people's energy? And she says sometimes the energy tingles, you know, and sets her hair up. Okay, so what we're talking about is you are walking into a situation, into an environment where energy from all the other people in the room, their auric energy, basically is you're coming into an energy field, okay? Greg Braden called it an energy field of possibilities because it is a loose, it's not firm, it's fluid. It's coming from the people because they're emitting, radiating their energy. Now, I was talking the other night about how we resonate with energy. We hear sounds coming from those people by their voice. We also feel their light energy, which is in that field, in their aura field. Now, some people, you know, actually can really feel, and sometimes people can interpret it as color because you have, like, the chakras, which are inside you, which are energy fields that are running through the physical body. So Edgar Cayce talked about the energy fields, and we know what they call the chakras. And the higher the vibration of those chakra energy fields does resonate. It goes out from the chakra, from the physical body, into your auric field. Now, many people have an auric field that may be 2 feet, 3 feet. Some people, I've been told I have 10 feet. That you come into my presence and you may feel that way down the road, you know, I mean, basically. But as the closer you get to the person in the physical, the tingling sensation may start, or you may start feeling something like maybe an uncomfortableness. So a lot of people are admitting, and it is light energy, it is sound energy, and of course, you know, the more you emit this energy from your higher consciousness. So let's think about that. So I wrote back to the group, releasing your soul's energies in your aura. The energy of the field of possibility surrounds your physical body. The higher the vibration of your energy centers creates this energy field. The higher the beliefs in your higher self-consciousness creates higher vibrations of your aura field. So within, so without. So above as so below. Okay? When we create higher beliefs, we create our energies that match the fields of creation that are already created. So what you're walking into a field of possibilities that are already created in the energy field. Now thinking about that, that's unseen. It's unseen because it's like molecules if you were to see how it's being formed. But the only way it's going to be formed into a manifestation, how do we do that? Okay. The thoughts or the mindset, your thoughts, your mindset of believing. Believing is that one thing that we have to have. Believing in your higher connections to your source of creation. Okay? Now, the emotions, which a lot of people have emotions, and these emotions are your desires, and they're coming from the heart energy to create from the deepest emotions of your heart center. So, you know, Greg Braden says that it's the highest energy that you can transmit is from your desires of your heart chakra, your heart energies. All right. So you're releasing all doubts and logical reasoning of this truth that I just told you, that you're creating from the creation of the source. All right. So we want to maintain a belief in the higher consciousness, the higher consciousness of yourself. That's not the ego self. That is the self that you believe in. That is where your empowerment comes from. Okay. We all feel these energies of this field that surround us when any person enters our auric field. Okay. The auric field is the Merkava, spelled M-E-R-K-A-B-A, and it stays with you in every human incarnation throughout the continuous life of the soul. Now, the Merkava kind of looks like a star thing. It's spinning around, and this Merkava is your energy field. Now, we have been able to get pictures with digital cameras, which kind of look like an orb because it's spinning, and it's working on light energy and sound energy, the Merkava. And some people can kind of see, if you look at that thing, because it's spinning, that it looks like an orb in the pictures, and we see them in pictures. Sometimes we don't see them afterwards. We look at our pictures. Oh, there's an orb there. That is an energy field. Now, it could be another soul within the energy field. Some people think maybe it's their loved ones, but we do enter and stay in an energy field when we enter into the earth. That's right. So we're spinning around in this light energy. All right. So believe in your energies that you are creating to go forward into the fifth dimension. The fifth dimension is where we start using that energy field around us called our light body. Okay, so any questions, please be sure to ask me the questions. Now, the third eye, an interesting other concept here. The single eye is the third eye, and many people will make attention to it, like in other countries where they'll put a dot there just to help them to remind them that they're to use their third eye. That's all that is a physical reminder, because the third eye is activated in most people on our planet right now. It's a pineal gland, and I know that you have that third eye, and this is your higher consciousness, and using the third eye is a possibility with your eyes closed when you're in meditation that the images would start coming through the third eye, because it's not really totally manifested in the third dimension what you're getting from your third eye. A lot of people will get images or words. The third eye is the dreaming eye, another way of saying that your third eye is more lucid. It's able to form visions. People see visions through the third eye, and sometimes the visions may appear kind of blurry, but then again, more concentration in your meditation, the vision will come more closer and manifested for you in that field of possibility. So this is a very interesting lesson, and I'm just going to say right now, all about activation today on my show. Give me a call for a reading, 347-838-8452. By the way, by being here, your energy is with me and you light up my life. Thank you so much.
Alone in the dark.
might ask yourself, what kind of energies am I attracting? You know, and what kind of energies do I allow in my aura, you know, in my energy field? What kind of energies are allowed in my energy field? Well, that comes down to your belief, but it actually, you kind of have to form a perception of the energy field, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of energies in the energy field. I mean, we certainly know that it has dimensions and it has a matrix of mindset out there. It's got kind of like getting entrapped in this and entrapped in that, because the energy fields have no particular manifestation. No particular. I mean, basically, they're out there and they're just waiting for some energy to come along and match it. Yeah. So you're just kind of like cruising through, following down your path on your journey, and directing, you know, kind of directing, you know, your higher self and processing and trying to be the best you can, you know. I mean, because you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy that you would allow something negative, would you? No, but then your perception kind of taunts you, that you look at the world and you say, well, this world is just bad. A lot of things going on, the media and what's going on. So you just start believing in that perception. So what do you attract? Well, you attract people who are like arguing about the politics, and they pull you in. It's almost like a jerking of your energy that you believe in, you know, and you say, wait a minute, how did I get in this conversation? You know, but then again, you get in full on it. Some people do, and they start talking about hate, and they start feeling kind of like woozy, like kind of a little bit depressed, because there's nothing they can do about it, but they sure have an opinion about it. And we have freedom of speech, so I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. We'll go home and get a headache, baby, because your physical will react as you react in your choice of your how to use your energy. And I'm not talking about energy. I'm talking about power, honey. How do you use your energy power? Are you going to empower other people? Are you going to bring them down? Well, whatever you choose, you attract that energy. You bring that energy into you. And then you got a reaction to it. It's like a virus, man. That's the only way I can look at it. You're feeling kind of ill, I'm having headaches, I can't sleep at night, I'm so worried all the time. Where in the heck did this energy come from? Well, baby, it came from you. Oh, yeah. So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Are you going to live in low energy? Well, it's your choice. I always tell people, I don't know about you guys, but I'm keeping my faith up, my higher source, my higher person, and I'm not going to allow anything in my energy field that doesn't match me. Keeping the faith.
If it seems like I've been lost, then let's remember. If you think I'm feeling older and missing my younger days, oh, then you should have known me much better. 'Cause my past is something that never got in my way. Oh, no. Still, I would not be here now if I never had the hunger. And I'm not ashamed to say the wild boys were my friends. Oh, 'cause I never felt the desire to let music set me on fire. Then I was saved. That's why I'm keeping the faith. Yeah, 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 keeping the faith. Long matador boots, only flag brothers had them with a Cuban heel. Iridescent socks with the same color shirt and a tight pair of chinos. Oh, I put on my shark skin jacket. You know the kind with the velvet collar and bitty bob shades. A fresh pack of Lucky's and a mint called Sensen. My old man's Trojans and his old Spice Tabache. Oh, comb my hair in a pompadour, like the rest of the Romeos wore a permanent wave. Yeah.
lot of fights, but it taught me how to lose, okay. Oh, I heard about sex, but not enough. Found that the dance is still looks tough anyway. Oh, yes, I did. I found that a man ain't just being macho. Ate an awful lot of late night driving food. Drank a lot of take home pay.
In the faith. I mean, I did come through with my faith. I mean, you got to have faith when you're in a drive-in with three men, three boys. Whoa, they thought they were men. I mean, I knew I was going to be fine, yeah. But I did put myself in some very strange situations. So the good old days were not really the good old days. And I've given up the good old days. And I'm living in the now moment because that's where it's all happening. I mean, yeah, we learned. We remember the good old days. But how long are we going to keep that story? Isn't it a drag? I mean, we are not even those people anymore. But then we keep dragging it out and replaying it and repeating it. How's that going to help us move on and move forward and take what we've learned and just go ahead and use it instead of still playing that old story? Like listening to an old song, repeating and repeating and repeating. Not going to help you manifest. What kind of energy is that? It's old energy. We are new energy. We are believing and we are working the fifth dimension now where we manifest. I know you're there. Oh, yeah. I know your third eye is activated. Listen to this song. It's a hip-hop thing, but it's a great song. Third Eye, right now on Blog Talk Radio.
Luke Bryan Smith, I am thankful for the continuous expansion of my consciousness. Now what does it take to convince you? What I am right now is what I've been through. This is real, I have no other motives than to move you like a locomotive, or better still, like a UFO. So listen to this composition, let's go. I could take you back a bit, but I let that go. Now I'm congruent with the universal flow. I read every night, affirmative prayer. I meditate daily, gratitude, despair. I know about philosophy, I learn from the best. Respect the teacher, expect success before I lay the rest. I self-reflect, I am now aware, what you give is what you get. I am here to serve, but I do express this. Please appreciate me before I'm dismissed. Elevate the level of my consciousness. Are you aware? My purpose is to share. Observe my perspectives from the penal gland. My third eye is now open, now I understand. Elevate the level of my consciousness. Are you aware? My purpose is to share. My third eye is now open, now I understand. The eye of Horus on my neck, they don't understand. They think I'm in a cult, Call me Illuminati, but I'm just here to serve. Show love to everybody. Share what I've learned from the likes of Ralph Emerson, Nikola Tesla, Dean Zimmerman, Earl Nightingale, Ernest Holmes. You get the picture, or am I wrong? It's your opinion, and that's what you're entitled to. Just do your research first. Find out if it's true. You assume your assumptions are fictional. Your love changes. Mine is unconditional. I'm a prime example of original, unique, eclectic, so to speak. Believe my sole purpose is to uplift, inspire people, cause a major shift. I'm a basic level of my consciousness. I'm being aware my purpose is to share. Observe my perspective from the pineal gland. My third eye is now open, now I understand. Elevate the level of my consciousness. Are you aware my purpose is to share? Observe my perspective from the pineal gland. My third eye is now open, now I understand.
Divine timing, yes. I've been observing divine timing now for the last, 5 years. But basically, linear time, you know, basically is on the clock. And we have to observe the clock because I have to observe it to do a radio show. You have to use it to get to work on time because the world's still on linear time. But divine timing is running in parallel. So basically, you're always observing that divinity within yourself. That, you know, that's a belief too, to know that there is another time because it's not really physical. It's not third dimensional time. But to understand, I mean, I was, talking about the synchronicities of the numbers, and a lot of people were giving me a hard time about, oh, well, yeah, some girl posted, like a real logical, doubtful person posted on my Facebook, oh, yeah, Brenda, yeah, well, it shows up on the clock. It's not that it shows up on the clock, you know. It's that you become aware of it. And she didn't get this concept at all. She was so logical, left brain, like telling she, you know what they say. I mean, there was a movie one time that says you just pee on everything. I don't know about that movie, but it was like a movie about like this girl was getting married, and she wished that she could be this old man, and then she lives this old man's life. I don't remember the name of the movie. Y'all probably know. But what I'm saying is that the thing about it is, why do people come along? You're trying to express yourself. You're talking about divine timing, synchronicity, something far beyond their consciousness, believe me, because she's a victim. She thinks that everything is all set in the matrix. That's a matrix. And, oh, yeah, so what? The clock says 111. Hey, it wasn't that the clock said 111. It was you. It was your own insights, your own spiritual divine timing leading you to look at the clock at that particular time in your awareness. She didn't like me at all. Of course, I deleted that post. It was no need. She was never going to get it. She's stuck in linear time. Let her be. I mean, I wrote to her and said, listen, it must be very boring living in the linear time because that is boring to me. You know, it's totally boring. Okay, don't y'all love divine timing? Yes, I do, and you should. Okay, so here we go. We're all on it. Who are you, Lesson, right now on Blog Talk?
Who are you? What makes you, you? Are you the same person you were last week, last year, 10 years ago? What is it that links your past self with your present self and future self? The problem of personal identity has puzzled and divided philosophers for hundreds of years, producing many different theories, along with some unusual thought experiments. Let's take a look. Before we begin, we should explain what we mean by identity. A person will change in many different ways over their lifetime. Take Steve, for instance. A year ago, Steve had a beard, listened to punk rock, and lived alone. Today, Steve is clean-shaven, listens to jazz, and has a family. In many ways, Steve has changed, and we can say he is no longer the same person he was a year ago. We can say that present Steve is not qualitatively identical to past Steve. However, when philosophers talk about personal identity, they're concerned with numerical identity. So we can say that past and present Steve are one and the same person. For example, Bruce Wayne and Batman are qualitatively different, but numerically identical, as Bruce Wayne is the same person as Batman. The bodily continuity theory argues that Steve at time 1 is identical with Steve at time 2, if and only if he has the same body at both times. But what happens if Steve has an operation and decides to replace his hands with hooks? Most people would agree that Steve is still the same person, as there is a physical continuity over time. This also accounts for the fact that although most of our cells will die and replace themselves several times throughout our lifetime, we continue to be the same person. The philosopher Sidney Shoemaker criticizes the bodily continuity theory with the story of Brownson. Imagine two people, Brown and Robinson, are both undergoing brain surgery, which involves removing their brain before replacing them back again. Unfortunately, Brown's brain is mistakenly inserted into Robinson's head, and Robinson's brain is put into Brown's head. The latter patient dies during the surgery, leaving only the person with Robinson's body containing Brown's brain. This person, which we'll call Brownson, has all the memories, beliefs, attitudes, and personality of Brown, but the body of Robinson. Most people would say that Brownson is identical with Brown, and not Robinson. The story of Brownson highlights that bodily continuity is not sufficient for personal identity, but rather it is the physical continuity of a specific part of the body, namely the brain, which is important. But is the brain even necessary for identity? Imagine a mad scientist who kidnaps both you and Steve. He tells you that he's going to swap all your memories and contents of your mind into Steve's brain, and all of Steve's mind into your brain. But before he does this, he gives you a choice. After the operation, he is going to give one body $100,000, and the other one is going to be tortured. You get to choose which one gets the torture. What would you choose? Your answer to this question will give you an idea of where you stand on the issue of personal identity. If you tell the mad scientist to torture your body because your mind will now be in Steve's body, then you are effectively rejecting the physical continuity theory and favoring the psychological continuity theory. The psychological continuity theory originates from the work of John Locke. Locke proposed that a person at time 2 is identical with a person at time 1 if he can remember what he did at time 1. So if Steve can remember last Tuesday when he replaced his hands for hooks, then he is identical with that person. The obvious problem with Locke's theory is that it's impossible to remember everything we do, but we also remember things incorrectly. An easy fix for this is to say that there has to be a continuity and connectedness between memories for identity to persist over time. So, if Steve can remember what he did yesterday, and yesterday Steve can remember what he did the day before, and so on, we can say that there is a psychological continuity between present Steve and past Steve. However, the psychological continuity theory means that those who lose their memories, say due to dementia, are no longer the same person they once were. The philosopher Derek Parfit takes a slightly different position on psychological continuity and argues that it is survival and not identity which is important. Parfit asks us to imagine a device called the brain state transfer device, which acts a bit like a teleportation machine. Once inside, it scans your body and mind before vaporizing you. It then produces an exact replica of you at another location. This replica is physically identical with you and has all your memories and personality. In this case, Parfit claims that the replica is identical to the original you. In a second example, the machine malfunctions and instead of vaporizing you, you survive and step out of the device. There are now two versions of you. Parfit argues that you survive as both people, but the transitivity of identity prohibits them from being identical with each other, as to be identical means you must share exactly the same properties, including your position in space. So according to Parfit, you can have psychological continuity without personal identity over time. There's no decisive answer to the problem of personal identity, and there are many other theories which we've not covered here. But what side are you on? Do you think psychological continuity is closer to the truth than physical continuity? Do we need a mix of both? Or do you have a completely different view? Let me know down in the comments. Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this video, make sure you subscribe.
Okay, as you shift your identity from one timeline to another timeline, you're in linear time, you're in divine time, you're shifting between the two timelines. So your identity shifts from the lower self possibly to the higher self, depending on your belief system. But you may not even consider that you even had a lower self, which was your ego, which were things that you made choices and decisions based on egotistical ideas of who you were. So then when you shift to that higher consciousness idea of who you are, your identity changes, and then you move into your divine timing, and that's where your manifestations are going to come from. You can create from the low vibration, but most of those creations are usually, well, they're time limited. Like, for instance, you might say, I hate somebody or I want to kill somebody. That might be a statement from your lower ego consciousness because you're feeling like, well, this person got in my way. This person needs to be taught a lesson. That would be the lower consciousness thinking of egotistical wise. I'm not connected to this person. I'm going to hurt this person. So you're living through that manifestation of that low hate vibration, and you will manifest hate. You will manifest the person to come after you. They become your enemy. So you kind of have to caution yourself to move into that low vibration. You know you're doing it. I mean, you observe it and you say, why do I hate that person so much? And you may come up with some logical reason. You might say, well, this person deserves it. Or you might say to yourself, these are the people, the low vibration, they talk about what they deserve. And certainly it's a low vibration to know and think that you deserve the best of everything. That's a very low vibration. It's very egotistical because it's a me, my personal, I take everything personal. It's a low vibration. The higher self moves you further into understanding your connection with other people, the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Casey talked about the golden rule. He did not talk about the new age. He said, hey, we're moving into the vibration of the divinity of the golden rule, doing unto others as you have them do unto you. And that was his main promise. A lot of people will post, they have reading groups for Edgar Cayce, and they'll put the New Age in. That's totally not connected with Edgar Cayce. The New Age came after Edgar Cayce in the 1960s. In fact, it came from Timothy Leary, who was high on drugs. It was kind of like a way of saying that the hippies were bringing in a new age, a revolution. It was more like a sexual revolution of everybody loving everybody. The New Age continues to reference the New Age movement and has lost a divinity part of it called the Golden Age, which came directly from the Bible. Jesus brought forth the Golden Age of doing unto others as you have them do unto you. And by the way, good morning here to everyone, the Jewish community. This is the new year for them, Rosh Hashanah. And basically, this is a new year. What they do is they start their new year. Of course, you know, we have our January for the Gentiles, which start the new year in January. But theirs starts today. And the basic thing that they do now is they go and they have a festival. They eat and they talk about their sins that they committed in the year, where they save them up. You know, I don't know about you. I don't save up my sins. My mistakes would pile up on me if I had to wait till January to do that or wait till the new year. I make sure that when I've done something, the Holy Spirit convicts me, and then I release it immediately. That I think that's a better way, but that's my perception because I'm a Gentile. Now, you may be Jewish, and you may be observing Rosh Hashanah today, the new year, and you're heading out to the festival, eating food, and, of course, you know, asking forgiveness for your sins. So they'll play the shofar, the sound, they'll have festivals, and they do it every year. And every year they proclaim this is the year that Jesus Christ is coming back, even though they're Jewish people. They still believe that the Messiah is coming back. He has never come, and this may be the first return of the Messiah, where the Gentiles believe in the other first year of the Messiah coming back. So we have a lot of things going on our planet right now. And will you jump for your love? Will you jump? Will you react in love? Jumping for your love. I mean, jump in. I mean, you are love. I mean, you got love inside you. Yeah, everybody does. I remember when I was young, I was roller skating, and that was a big song. And what we do is we were in motion. I mean, you're going around, you know, and with your roller skates at the roller skating ring. And every time they play that song, they play that jump, we would jump literally on two skates. I mean, I was so into that motion. Thinking about motion. Energy is in motion. It's not stagnant. It's always moving. And you have to be moving with it. That's an interesting thing. So while you're sitting down, you know, be still, meditate, you're going to feel a tug. You know, people say, I can't sit still. Well, it's very difficult to sit still. That's why it's really better to kind of go walking and meditate. You know, it's preferred. You know, a lot of people who took my class back in the day, they would say, Brent, I just cannot sit still for a meditation. I said, well, that's your energy, man. You got to keep that energy moving. That's the energy of life inside you. You need to walk in nature And they said, you know, that's better for me because I feel like I'm really getting into to nature and life. And, yeah, the motion is so important. You know, a lot of people will sit in one position for a long period of time, and they'll get up and they feel so tired. What causes that physical to get tired and your bones ache? In fact, I'm going to kick my chair back here, kind of stand up a little bit. Oh, my goodness, I've been sitting too long. And it's not good to sit too long in any one position. Even at work, they suggest you stand up a little bit, kind of move your arms around, you know, and kind of take a break here. I'll go walking in the middle of the show. I'll go outside in the middle of the show while the lesson's playing, run to the bathroom. Oh, I'm always in motion. And I want to stay in that motion. I don't want to stay. When I was in the hospital, they had me in the bed, and I was always saying, can I get out of the bed and sit in the chair? They said, come on. And I sit in the chair a while. Then I get in the bed for a while because I needed to have that energy activated within my whole body and my whole physical, my whole spiritual. So just remember that. Let's put a little bit out there song right now, Blog Talk Radio. Somebody out there?
Psychic soul card reading show, messages with the Holy Spirit, not an accident. I know you're out there somewhere. Give me a call. 347-838-8452. Here's the Moody Blues. I know you're out there somewhere.
And I've left behind the empty streets that once inspired my life. And the strength of the emotion is like thunder. Just the promise that made each other haunts me to the end. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere. You can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somewhere, somewhere, somewhere.
Call others for because they're out there somewhere. Do we call? Do we know that we can call? You can call 347-838-8452, or you can call out to God. You can say, God, this is for that special person that's connected to me. Call out today. 347-838-8452. 8452. That's right. So call me, people. Come on now. What you waiting for? Thank you so much for coming in.
Around you and protect you.
enjoy this talk given at the Austin Center for Spiritual Living, where we live and teach the principles of science of mind and spirit. For more information, visit austincfl.org.
Good morning, everybody. Run into a little bit of traffic out there today? Yes, I think somebody are still dealing with the traffic out there today. But at any rate, it's wonderful to see all of you. You know, there's a wonderful story. It's actually a cartoon that appeared a number of years ago. Remember Peanuts? Charles Schulz invented Peanuts. There was, who was it? There was Lucy, there was Linus, and there was Charlie Brown. Well, Lucy, Linus, and Charlie Brown were out standing on a hillside one day and looking up at these beautiful white billowy clouds. And they were breathtaking. And Lucy looks into these clouds and says, "Will you look at those clouds? If you look at them for just a short while, you begin to see almost anything that you could possibly imagine. And what do you see, Linus?" And Linus looks up and thinks of him and he says, "Oh my heavens, that looks like the Pinta, the Nina, and the Santa Maria of Columbus approaching the West Indies." "Oh," and he said, "and over there, I think that's Stonewall Jackson charging down upon the Union forces. And there's Paul on the road to Damascus being struck by the light of God." And Lucy looks at Linus and said, "That's wonderful. And Charlie Brown, what do you see?" And Charlie Brown looks up and he says, "Well, I was going to say I saw a horsey and a ducky, but I changed my mind." Isn't that typical of how we reference what it is we have to offer according to what somebody else feels, or discount ourselves? Let me tell you a story from my own personal experience. This is a true one. I don't know, maybe there is a Charlie Brown, but this one I know, there is a Richard Impressia. Some number of years ago, when I first got out of graduate school and I went back to work at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and I was given an area, a whole new area for the development of a laboratory. I had my own lab. I was going to build a little, an area within which we were going to manufacture certain kinds of materials. And it was research. And this whole group was dedicated to looking at a new class of materials, and we could proceed in almost any way we wanted. So this is really an opportunity for me. But I wasn't happy with this at all, because all of the other people in the group were scientists or engineers that were working on very sophisticated measurement techniques. And I looked at that and I saw that is so much more significant than what I was going to do, which was just to manufacture some new materials or prepare these materials, produce them, and then they would take them and he would do all the testing out. And I was complaining about this to a friend of mine, an old friend of mine that I've known for many, many years. As a matter of fact, I've known him for many years. He's just turned 90 last month, and I talked with him on the phone. And I was bemoaning the fact that all of these other people were doing very sophisticated things, and I was just out there doing research and developing new materials, and I went blah, 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 and really discounting myself because I kept looking at what somebody else was doing and thinking that that's what I ought to be doing. And he said, "Richard, what the hell's the matter with you?" He says, "Don't you realize that none of us would be doing anything if you weren't making the materials, new materials, different materials, that we could examine?" And you know, I never thought of it that way. This is what a lot of us do. We tend to discount what we're doing. Oh, anybody can do that. Yeah, but you may be the only one that's really doing it. You see what I'm talking about? Looking at somebody else, idealizing what we think they are all about, and discounting who we are and where we are. It's interesting because each one of us is a bundle of feelings and a range of beliefs and fears and anxieties and apprehensions and paranoia, jealousy, angers and hates. We have all these things, and we have love and joy and all of that. But sometimes we just cover over all the good stuff with all of these kinds of negative things. And what these negative things are often the result of some kind of conditioned reaction to something that's going on out there that may or may not have anything at all to do with us. And we learn very early in life how to respond to life, and it's usually the result of some kind of conditioning. As we begin to delve into this and really begin to look at it, after a while, we come to the conclusion that we are really the one that's at cause. And the problem, a lot of times, is we don't value ourselves for who we are. Just as I couldn't see myself at that very practical level as making a contribution that I really was making, and my friend was right, nobody else in our group of about 25 people would have been able to do very much unless they had what I was producing for them. It was a valuable thing. And we've got to come back and begin to look at ourselves and go deeper than just what the projection in the material realm is of how we are interacting at this life level. We have to look deeply within ourselves to come to an understanding of who we really are. You see, you don't need to be fixed. You're complete right now where you are. And a lot of people want to retreat from that. We have to, I think, begin to understand the truth about ourselves. We've got to start telling ourselves the truth about who we are. We're made in the image and likeness of that which made everything. All we can be is a projection of it. You've heard that statement, God in me, as me, is me. And a lot of people don't want to take hold of that and even look at it or entertain it. First of all, it puts an awful lot of responsibility on you. You have to discover this. And then once you discover that it's true, or even if you only intellectually come to that conclusion, then it becomes your responsibility to act upon that. But the fact of the matter is, telling the truth about yourself is like affirming that I am complete. I'm okay. I like myself the way I am. Let's do a little exercise here. Let me hear back from you. I am complete.
I am complete.
That's pretty good. It's not bad, but I really want to hear I am okay. Ah, you're doing better. I like myself the way I am.
I like myself the way I am.
You know, that's really pretty good. And I saw only a few hesitations out there. Some of you, I'm sure, felt just a little bit strange doing that. A lot of times we have resistance to being able to express something that in our normal everyday activities we find very hard to believe. And I think part of the reason that we find it hard to believe is we assess ourselves according to circumstances and things that are going outside of us, going on outside of us. But we can begin to affirm and reaffirm and reaffirm these truths about ourselves. I like to ask the question, are you really respecting yourself for who you are? Are you really recognizing who you are? You remember the comment that was made in the Gospel of Matthew, I think it was. Be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is already perfect. Now let's look at that. What does it mean? If you go back and examine the roots of the words, be perfect as your Father, and the word heaven. You see, the word Father, as translated from the Aramaic, also has a connotation that doesn't show up in the scriptures that we generally read, of source. And heaven, we've been told where that is. It's not out there somewhere. The kingdom of heaven is within. So be perfect. Be as you are intended to be, the ideal you, the God you, the image likeness you. which is God in you, as you, functioning through you in your experience. Be as you are intended to be according to the source that exists within you right now. We have a tendency to not even look at something like that and think about it. Think about it. That's your assignment for next week. Take that little scriptural verse, be perfect. Even as the Father within is already perfect. There's a wonderful cartoon that I came across a number of years ago in a book of cartoons by a fellow named Ashley Brilliant. And he made this comment, and I don't remember what the cartoon looks like, or, you know, the graphical part of it, but I remember the words. It was, how does it feel to be one of several billion lords of a beautiful, magnificent planet? Have you ever thought of yourself in that way? You are one of, how many billion of people are there? There's 7 billion people on the face of the earth today. 7 billion. And you're one of 7 billion. In other words, everybody is really a lord on this magnificent planet. How does it feel? Or do you think of yourself as less than what you really are, a God child made in the image and likeness of God, that which made everything? Ernest Holmes, our founder, makes a comment about this that I like very much. He makes this statement in a little book called Good for You. He said, every person is an incarnation of God, and no two are exactly alike. And because two persons are alike, then God does something different in each one of you. Each of us is what we are because that's what God is doing in us. Think about that. Each of us is what we are because that's what God is doing in us. This is a hard concept, especially for many of us who grew up in traditional kinds of teachings where God was out there and we are way over here and there is this tremendous separation and we're to spend all of our life trying to make ourselves attractive to God or attracting God into our experience. And God may just look at us and say, oh, I'm not interested today. That's a concept a lot of people have. Oh, but by the grace of God, I was finally accepted, and I feel whole now. That ain't the way it is, folks. You don't have to go find God and induce God into your life. All you have to do is awaken to the fact that God is at the very center of your being. You are one with all that is right now. I love the Bhagavad Gita, that great Hindu scripture, where Krishna is reported to have said, it is better to fulfill one's own law of life, even though imperfectly carried out, than to try to, or than to fulfill that life pattern of another and be successful in the attempt. Think about it. We've got to be ourselves. You say, yeah, but I don't particularly like myself. No, wait a minute. You haven't discovered yourself. You haven't discovered the wonderfulness of you. You have your own unique personality and expression, your gifts and your talents that are waiting to be expressed in your life. But we have a tendency oftentimes to look over here. You know, I want to do sophisticated scientific measurements. I don't want to do the thing that I was called to do that was so far more important, actually, to me it was, and to that whole group. When we begin to fulfill ourselves according to what the demands are made on us individually, and usually it's an inner demand that makes itself known to us, then we have this incredible sense of fulfillment that we can't help but feel satisfaction and that fulfillment at the emotional level within each one of us. You are not a small, insignificant, unimportant, inadequate, klutz in this life. You are a God child. You don't need to be fixed. All you need is to be able to open to the truth of who you are. I mean, I'm preaching to me, folks. You know, I'm on up in years, older than most of you by now. I know a few out there that are a little bit older. And I've been around the block, and I still have to deal with this myself. You're an individual expression of all the power in the universe, of all the love in the universe. You are a God child in the image and likeness of that which made it all. You are complete. You are whole right now, and you don't have to be fixed. For us to change experiences of life which have caused us pain and upset and disturbance and disharmony, we've got to realize that we never help ourselves by rejecting any part of ourselves. The degree to which we doubt that we are complete is the degree to which we are victims of our own consciousness. And we find ourselves identifying with some concept in our mind that really has been conditioned into our mind by some experience we've had or something that somebody has said to us to create that. And the human conditioned mind, the ego mind, by the way, will take hold of an idea. And I don't know why this is. There is a psychology associated with it, and I'm not sure anybody can really express it. But the human mind, the ego mind, has an idea. It will do virtually anything to perpetuate that idea, to validate that idea. It holds on to it. And you're the only one that can change that. And the way you change it is to come back not to fighting the idea or your behavior associated with that idea or that concept, but quieting yourself and opening yourself to this truth that we're talking about. That you're already whole, you're already wonderful, you are already complete. We always, we seem to very often at least, allow our ego to trick us into believing that we are incompetent, inadequate, stupid, clumsy, awkward, ugly, unworthy, or whatever. That is, that we're not complete. And this, I think, comes from identifying with what we think we have, what we think we are, and what we do, rather than the truth of who we are. This doesn't mean that we're not involved in life. But what it means is that we don't identify with what's happening in life, a lot of those circumstances, because those are not the truth about who we are. The mental process that convinces us that we are not complete, that we are not whole right now, and that we need to be fixed, is the same one that keeps us convinced that we're not enough. It's also the same process by which we can change, because it involves choice. And that's where the power of affirmation comes in. To be able to grab hold of some of those ideas, just like a little while ago we spoke, I am complete, I am okay, I like myself the way I am. And then a little voice that says in your ear, BS, it can't really be that way. And you say, shut up. I am complete. I am whole. I like myself the way I am. I am okay. We keep reminding ourselves of that. Now, these are the truths about you. And intellectually, you may be able to accept those truths. But emotionally, there may be something that's saying, no, no, no. You say, shut up. And you keep telling yourself, because that is an innate truth within you, there is that within you that resonates with the statement of that truth, and after a while, it begins to fill your mind, not to condition you, but to clarify, and if you will, cleanse your mind of those false ideas. We are identified with spirit. And that's the task that we have in life. I want to read to you some comments. I reproduce these on a little card that's over on the information table, if any of you are interested. There's a few sheets over there or a few cards about this side. But these are what I call our identity with spirit, and they come from the scriptures of the world. This is what I'm going to leave you with this morning. This comes from the Vedas, which are ancient scriptures. Some people claim that they are the oldest scriptures, or come from the oldest scriptures, which is the Vedanta of Hinduism. It says, the inner self sits ever in the heart of all that's born, smaller than small, yet greater than great. In the heart of this creature, the self, with a capital S, the God self, doth repose. Isn't that a wonderful statement? And we don't have to go into a strange teaching like Hinduism to find it in our own scriptures, or the one that many of us identify with, and that is the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament has that statement in the very first chapter. God created man. You have to forgive the sexist terminology here, but I'm reading it the way it appears in the King James Version. God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. That's the same idea, isn't it? And in the Psalms, King David says this statement. He says, ye are gods. All of you are children of the Most High. How much more clear can you get that? This identification between you and the infinite. And then in the New Testament, where Jesus is reported to have said, know that I am in my Father, I am in the Source, and that you are in me, and that I am in you. You get the connection? Do you get the equivalency there? We're one thing. And then the Quran says, the question is asked, I am in your souls. Why see ye not? And finally, in the Bhagavad Gita, which again comes out of the Vedanta, he who seeketh me with heart resolved, he surely findeth me his innermost self. We need to open ourselves. Mm-hmm. I am okay. I am available. I am aware. I am guided. My life is good. And you'll find that marvelous things begin to happen as a result of your developing that kind of an attitude. Let's have a moment of prayer, shall we? Let us know the truth of what has already been spoken here this morning. And what we experience in our meditation before the service even began. That there is but one life, and that life is God. That life is perfect. That life is the life that fills, imbues, infuses everyone, everywhere. It cannot be otherwise. That is the nature of reality. In the beginning was one thing. And that thing expressed is all things. So all things must be in some way characterized by that one. Know these words to be the truth for you. I am the very expression of God in this human form, I am one with all of the intelligence, the creativity, the harmony, the balance, the joy, and the love of God. And in that realization, I know that all disturbance must be quelled. That there is only that divine harmony and balance. It is the nature of God to be that way. Therefore, it must be that way for me. Wow. What a concept. Can I believe that? Yes, I believe it. And even if I don't believe it, I say I believe it. And I believe it, and I believe it, and I believe it. And in that believing, in that act of saying, I open myself and invite it into my experience. I invite that realization into the experience of every aspect of my life. The one life, the one power, the one intelligence, the one goodness, the one creativity, and this abundance that surrounds me is all the one field within which I live, move, have my being, and resonate. So I am complete right now. And in that realization, I am healed of all disturbance, of all misconception, and know the truth that God in me, as me, is me expressing as who I am. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mother, Father, loving God. I know this is true. I accept it is so. I allow it to be. And together we declare, and so it is.
Wherever you are on your journey, I always tell people this. Take what you need, because you're very unique. You are whole. You don't need to be fixed by me or anybody. You know, if our world would have this truth from the collective consciousness, it's in the collective consciousness. All known religions have said it. We've heard it over and over again, that we're all connected to God, that we were created by God. And even people who have radio shows know this to be true, but they live in their ego, and they're using their ego to tell people they need to be fixed. And they have an agenda, and their agenda is to make money off of fixing people. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't need to be fixed. I believe that I'm whole and complete. And once you believe that, you don't need someone to fix you. You don't need somebody to advise you. You have your own answers. We become codependent on other people and we forget who we are. We lose our identity. We give our power away to those that we think, for some reason, know better than we know. No one knows you like you know yourself. No one can actually help you unless you help yourself. No one can change you unless you change yourself. And vice versa. You can't help anybody to change unless they want to change. It's all energy. It's all love. It's unconditional. Don't say you're going to help me and put a condition that I have to pay you. Pay you for what? For something I already have inside me? It's illogical. And I must say, back in the day, when I was working at psychic fairs, there were psychics there who were getting money to fix people. And those people would sit down at my table. And I told them, you are whole. You are complete. You are unique. You are the one that fixes you. And they woke up right then. You mean, Brenda, I don't have to wait next year or wait 6 months for my boyfriend to come back? I said, no. You need to fix you now. And you need to create that energy of unconditional love and forgiveness and stop judging the situation and the person that you're dating and stop judging yourself. And let me tell you, they were set free. Because the truth is that people who think they can fix you and change you are lying to you through an agenda of greed and pride in their ego. And I'm going to say it. And I've been saying it since 1960, and I'm continuing to say it. Edgar Casey knew it was going on in his lifetime in the 40s and 50s. People wrote him letters about people who had taken their money and not helped them. He read those letters. They're in the readings. You can go to the Edgar Casey Library and read how many people have been taken advantage of on our planet. People who promised things and all they wanted was their money. All they wanted was to be fixed by someone, but they were still ill and they were not healed. Edgar Casey told them the truth of their connection and source to God. And Edgar Casey told them the healing way holistically to heal themselves. Not by doing some type of ritual with rocks, crystals, burning candles, all of those outside things. He dismissed them. He said holistic healing comes from the person in the wholeness of them and the oneness of them and their connection to source. That's Edgar Casey. If you haven't read Edgar Casey, ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, you can go on their website and get new perceptions on how to be whole in your own self. To be whole, to be completing yourself, and to understand your connection to source. That is your identity. That is your true identity. And that is the glory of love by expressing it.
You've got to give a little, take a little.
Have you ever watched the movie Beaches with Bette Midler? Her friend had cancer. Her friend had a daughter. Bette Midler in the movie did not try to fix the cancer, nor did any kind of healing thing or anything. She was there to love, the glory of love. She was there to support and encourage her friend. And, of course, her friend asked her to raise her daughter. It was a cryful, I mean, tearful. It's one of those things that you just see something in action. You remember somebody wrote that, and yeah, it may have been based on a real story, because many times caretakers are just there, there to hold your hand, there to support you. They're not trying to fix you. They're observing you. They, you know you've been given a death sentence. You know you're dying. And that the spirit is still alive to love that person through that spiritual connection. How many times you've done that? I mean, the person may even reject you being there. They may say, I don't want you to fix me. Yeah, they might say that to you. I don't want you to even take your time to be with me. But you say to them, I just want to be here for you. Just to be here for you. And you're doing that because you need it too, and they should know that. You know, they know that you need to be there for them, to give that type of unconditional love. Yeah, at the deathbed, yeah. I know I needed to hold my mother's hand when she was in a coma. No one else in the family needed to do that. I needed to do that. And I went in there. I was just very selfish, yes. And the nurses said, well, I don't understand why you're holding your mother's hand in a coma. She doesn't know you're there. And, of course, I dismissed them. I said, no, no, oh, no, I know I'm here. And that's good enough for me. And I know that my mother knows I'm here because in my spirit I feel it, you see. I didn't have to have her talking to me. I didn't have to have her open her eyes. None of those requests. Didn't need to, for her to wake up in a miracle or anything like that. No, no. This was a spiritual thing that I needed to do. No regrets here, people. And I'm so happy and in gratitude that God led me in the spirit to hold my mother's hand while she was in a coma. And I talked to her in spirit. And I spoke a little bit vocal, too. I said, Mom, I understand you didn't want to go to a nursing home. And I understand that my stepfather is going to have to pull the plug. And I know it's going to affect him. And I pray for him that he has the courage to do it because the doctor said that's what needs to be done. Yeah. And I supported him in his pulling the plug. And for 3 days after the plug, of course, Mother finally departed. But before she departed, I held her hand in that coma. And I said, Mom, if you can hear me, squeeze my hand. And she did. Now, the nurses said, no, no, that's a reaction. Oh, no. It was when I asked her in spirit. I knew we had spirit-to-spirit communication. And I knew that my mother heard me in spirit. And it's been proven. Many people here are in a coma. So when she held my hand really tight, I knew it was time to let her go. And I blessed her, and I told her that Jesus was waiting for her. Whether she believed it or not, that didn't matter to me because this was about me. Yeah, it was about me and my spiritual connection and no regrets. You see, we have to do things like that, you know. And, of course, I prayed for a miracle. I never gave up on a miracle. You never do. And I asked God about it, and I prayed about it for days. And you've been there. Everybody's been there. All right. Thank you for listening. 405, good morning. Are you on the line, 405? Let's see here. I don't know if technology is working on the calls. 405, can you hear me? 405, can you hear me? Okay. Evidently, we don't have phone working today. That's been the reason all day long. Okay. Well, we've been having technical problems. 405, I'll try to punch it again. 405, can you hear me? 405, can you hear me? No. So this is why we haven't had calls today on the show, which I understand a lot of people are having these problems. Higher Love, right down Block Talk Radio. Do we have sound in chat? Can y'all let me know? There are people in chat, but I cannot answer any phone calls. Can you let me know if we have sound in chat? Not, I'm just going to close the show because we're having technical problems here. Okay, nobody's responding, so evidently you cannot hear me. Thank you for listening this morning. That's the end of the show. Thank you.